Your attention, please. The Walt Disney World Railroad, now boarding for a scenic trip around the Magic Kingdom. Board!
Brad, last week I watched a documentary that I never knew that I wanted. It was a feature-length documentary on Fastpass on YouTube by Defunctland. And I've now watched it through three times. I never knew how interesting I found queuing theory, but man, this is it's a great documentary, and I'll put the link to it in the show notes. So if any listeners want to have some context for what we're going to talk about this episode, it's about an hour and 42 minutes long. It's very long, but it's very good, and it's set up kind of as a narrative, so it does a good job at holding your attention. But I really like it. What were your overall thoughts?
Okay, so first I needed to go look at Defunctland's YouTube, because this is not the first time that I've watched one of their videos. I watch them here and there. Honestly, there's some part of me that's kind of hesitant to talk about their videos, because if anybody starts watching their stuff, you will have absolutely no need to hear from us. You will realize just how poor our abilities to talk about Disney are in comparison to people who are really good at this stuff. Though I guess they don't spend a lot of time talking about current events as much. So we have that going. We just don't need to pivot, right, to talking about the history of Disney, because they do that very, very much better than we can. But you sent me this video, which, again, YouTube had been recommending to me. I just hadn't found my way to watching it. And you said, hey, can we talk about this? And I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'll watch that video. By the way, it's an hour and 42. And I'm like, what? Wait, who? Because that is not the average length of their videos for the most part.
Yeah.
Their videos, tend to be 20 to 30 minutes, I think, on average. Not that they're not without their longer run stuff.
This one is unusually long, though.
Yes, yeah.
But I think it needed to be. It's got a big story to tell.
100%. And when you said that, I was like, I'll totally do that, because I already agreed to it. I can make that work. But actually sitting down and watching it, I had no trouble whatsoever sitting for almost 2 hours to hear somebody talk about Fastpass, because, again, these people do it way better than we do. So it's very engaging. Mm-hmm. It's not dry to me. I don't know. Is it dry and I'm just a weirdo, or is it not dry?
It's not dry to the right person. I think if you like theme parks and you find it interesting, how when people build theme parks, they think about queuing and how to most efficiently get people through an attraction. If that sounds interesting to you, then yeah.
Then you will not, because there is still a way to be interested in this information and still be really, really bored when somebody talks to you about it. Yeah. And that's not the case with this video. So I found it to be very enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if after spending almost 2 hours watching it, if I totally buy into all of the results that came from it. But then I'm also, as we'll get into, I am definitely the person who would still make the argument that I thought Fastpass was better, but because I was friends with the monster, right? So... Right. At the same time, I recognize the issues, and I've talked before about wanting to go back to the pre-Fastpass times, or going back to the pre-Fastpass Plus times, and I think this video kind of also agreed with my thought process there.
Yeah. So there are two. There's two pretty distinct halves to this video. The first half, he talks a lot about. It starts out talking about FastPass and how Disney created FastPass, the original ticket-based, near card-based one. And then goes into FastPass Plus and all the different iterations of FastPass Plus and how it serves, basically people who are annual pass holders who, understand everything and go all the time. People who go, infrequently, which you and I are, yeah. And then people who go once in a lifetime. Kind of the takeaway from those discussions is it's the original FastPass was great because it let people be self-selecting, which I thought was interesting because it was a little bit of a libertarian, like just keep the, not the government, but in this case, like Disney, the corporation, keep the corporation out of it. Just let people self-select and kind of do what they want, which I thought that was really interesting. And it wasn't an aspect of FastPass that I'd ever thought about. Because basically what they say is in the beginning, you had the ticket system, A through E ticket, and like all the E ticket attractions would be full all the time. And so FastPass kind of helped.
By the fact that they were E ticket attractions.
Right.
Not even because they were better attractions, but because the fact that they were e-ticket attractions and e-tickets were, you got fewer of them in your ticket book, meant that Disney told you that
right.
that attraction was better.
These were more valuable.
Right. And so, therefore, they became harder to get and had longer lines versus, well, so before you got into FastPass, just moving to coming in the park, you can suddenly go to whatever attraction you want. There was a shift in what attractions were popular because there was no longer, so you saw more people going to the A ticket, B ticket, or especially like D ticket attractions and kind of more balancing out the crowds versus the A through E ticket system.
Right.
And then FastPass.
Right, and then FastPass, which let people basically hold their spot in line for an e-ticket and then go and do an A, or B or C ticket attraction. So it really helped kind of, it brought the wait times for the e-tickets down and it brought the wait times for the A, B, C, D tickets up to kind of equalize a little bit.
But not exponentially did it bring the A through D ticket up.
Right. It just... And so this is where the queuing theory is interesting. They talked about, something like Haunted Mansion, where you have an omni-mover type attraction that can do, just for ease of math, say 1,000 people an hour. If you have anything less than 1,000 people an hour coming onto that attraction, it has a negative wait time. And so the more people, like if you have 500 people riding the Haunted Mansion every hour, you're losing 500 units of capacity because that's 500 empty seats every hour churning through that attraction. And so getting more people to go to Haunted Mansion isn't necessarily going to create a wait. You can pump 500 more people an hour into Haunted Mansion and still have a 0 minute wait time. And that's just like, I've never thought of it that way. But if you're not filling the ride's capacity, it technically has negative weight and you can then push more people to it and it's still a walk-on, but that ride isn't eating people, and getting them off the path, or out of the walkways. So I thought that was interesting. The whole concept of a negative weight, And just the fact that, Haunted Mansion's a bad example because it's always awful, but like the Little Mermaid in New Fantasyland.
Well, wait, do you want an even better, do you want the best example in all of Magic Kingdom?
What?
Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because that attraction, okay, so if you're, if again, if you want to nerd out about this kind of stuff, www.themeparks.com has hourly capacity numbers for the attractions, you know, that they've kind of calculated and have collected from other places. And that attraction, of the ones in Magic Kingdom that they have numbers for, which I, you know, so they don't have Space Ranger Spin, Country Bear Jamboree, you know, so they're possibly missing some that could eat more, I think, in those, or like the Railroad or the Enchanted Tiki Room. But Carousel Progress can eat 3,600 people an hour.
Hmm.
The next best is Haunted Mansion at 2,400. So that is an additional 1,200 people an hour that it can eat. But there is no, you know, there is nowhere near 3,600 people ever going to Carousel Progress in an hour.
Right. So that, that attraction is wasting capacity. Yeah. Right. It's a waste of capacity, basically. And did you find it interesting the idea for FastPass came from a ski lift where they had reservation based and a standby line?
Yeah, I did.
Or
in
a
that
single rider.
Yeah, it was single rider line. And I did in that I didn't know exactly where that had come from, but that it was a single rider line or something like that really made sense to me. You know, when they described where his idea had come from, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, so that totally makes sense. What I think was most surprising to me was how early FastPass started being thought about before it actually even happened. You know, because essentially they were there were talks that they would actually move to a reservation system, not a FastPass, but an actual reservation system. Really, really early on, but trying to figure out how they would handle, you know, when people, essentially what would become the standby queue, how they would do that and making all that math work. I don't know. The more that I watch this, the more amazed I was that FastPass has ever worked. You know what I'm saying? Like it has, and with varying degrees of success. But that you could ever even get this off the ground when there are so many variables to account for, it becomes very surprising that they're able to do it. So,
and so the idea of the ski, the idea gotten from the ski lift was there was a standby line, there was a line for the lift, and then a single rider line. And what they would do is, you know, say the ski lift is four people wide. If there was ever a party of like three people, they would take one person from the single rider line and put it in the chair with everybody else. That way, the ski lift never lost capacity. There were always four people on there. You know, if there was a party of two, they'd put two from the single rider. Party of three, they'd put one. You know, so you always had the ski lift running at maximum capacity.
Think a la the single rider line at, you know, Expedition Everest, right. Test Track, all those places in the parks that have a single rider. And realize what I think it I think some of that was also realizing what the purpose of that was.
Yeah.
To make sure the ride is always operating as efficiently as possible, in that, as you know, it is running as many people through it as possible in any given hour, which I don't know that I'd ever really thought about the purpose of a single rider line before. It's totally makes sense. And I like to think I would have gotten there, but I just never really considered. I was like, oh, well, they've got an empty seat and they don't want single riders to have to, you know, they don't want to have to go through the trouble of finding somebody to fill that seat. But that there was a good reason to not let that seat go empty.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I honestly, I'm dumb and had not dawned on me up until watching this video.
Well, no, I don't think you're dumb. I think it just, why would you ever think about that? Like, why would, I guess, park ops.
Because I'm not Bruce Laval.
Yeah, right. But yeah, so that's kind of the first half is just talking about FastPass. A lot of the negative aspects of FastPass Plus we've already talked about. A lot of the negatives in the documentary are about how complicated it was. And I mean, we don't have to get into how complicated FastPass Plus was. Anybody who's used it, especially early on when you had to go to the kiosks to make your, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth reservation, it was awful. So I don't really feel like we need to dunk on FastPass Plus again. I think FastPass Plus at the end was starting to get better. It was starting to get good, but we'll never know. It's Genie now. But so that's kind of the first half. Do you have anything else you wanted to say about the first half of the video?
I
want to get into Shapeland next.
Okay. Not particularly, though I did. Well, okay, so it kind of gets into Shape, but it's not explicitly. I think you really want to just like dive in on Shapeland, right?
Yes, and I want to offer a spoiler alert because there's kind of a fun reveal in the second half of the video, and if you don't want that reveal spoiled for you, you need to go watch. There's a fake theme park called Shapeland, and there's kind of a fun reveal. So if you don't want that spoiled for you, go watch the video and then come back and listen to the second half of our discussion.
But, and then go, why did I waste my time? Why am I wasting my time listening to you guys when I've already heard all this stuff much more competently explained to me? No, I just love the part where, you know, essentially they get to the point where they're like, hey, it's all broken and it's great.
Yeah.
Because that means nobody can, you know, that means we can start charging for
it. Charge
people. Because we can charge to fix the problem that we created.
Yeah, everything's broken and we're going to make people pay to unbreak it.
But Johnson, they'll never allow for that. We need some sort of worldwide event to allow that whole portion of the video is just so beautifully done.
Yeah.
Like the way they were making those points was just wonderful. So yeah.
Those quotes from Bob Chapek inserted in there were, like, because of how they were set up, just were, like, God, they were savage. You know, like, saying, since the parks are closed, we were able to make moves that we wouldn't have been able to do in operating, you know, in operating capacity, and we're going to make more moves. It's just like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
man.
we're not done yet. But
with hindsight, here's the thing. Oof.
That's not savage. That's not because that's simply saying he said this thing. Like, that is just providing context to what he meant the whole time.
Yeah.
So don't pull any punches with regards to good old Bob. I think that maybe the other thing that's very interesting, talking about FastPass and talking about the people who were involved, you know, fully realizing that Disney didn't have any idea how this was actually going to help them monetarily.
Yeah.
But the idea that FastPass, to some extent, was about, like, trying to create a better park experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, was about trying to make things better for the guests, you know, not because that would tangibly lead to there wasn't going to be a one-to-one of because we did X, we made Y more dollars, but just we want to make Disney World as good as it can, you know, or Disney World and Disneyland as good as they can be. Because that will, in the long run, lead to more money.
Yeah. And that it was essentially a gamble. It was a billion-dollar gamble on guest experience.
It was a gamble, but it was also somewhat, in some ways, and I'm not going to say in some ways maybe by the bigwigs, but by the boots on the ground that were doing the work, I think for some of them, this was somewhat an altruistic enterprise.
I definitely think that. Yeah,
like
for sure.
They were doing this because they went, I think this would be really cool for guests to be able to do this. Not even about, you know, like because they were looking at the long, you know, looking at the big picture and saying increased guest satisfaction leads to more guests wanting to come back to the parks. It was the view of, I want every guest to be as happy as they can be while they're at Walt Disney World.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even the closing argument about Genie, where Genie is, you know, if you're optimistic, Genie is undoing the bad parts of FastPass Plus by, you know, tiering the popular attractions and kind of an attempt to make it a level playing field for everyone. You know, pessimistically, it's to make Disney more money because, you know, they've broken it and they're going to make you pay to have a good time. But, you know, I can see how having Genie be a day of thing does take some of the complexity away from people who understood, like, you know, you have to book 60 days out. And that goes back to the discussion about, you know, regular people versus once-in-a-lifetime people who, if they, you know, if you're a once-in-a-lifetime person who books your own vacation, you might not even know you need to book 60 days out. And then you have, you know, two-hour waits.
There are a lot of people who don't... I mean, all you have to do is go to any... Go to any restaurant. I think restaurants are where it is most evident. When you go to a restaurant and you hear somebody come up and go, well, what's the wait? Well, I'm sorry, we can't, you know, all we've been. What do you mean they're all booked? Like,
yeah,
the number of people who don't.
For right. 3 months.
Exactly. The number of people who don't realize that you even have to make a dining. And I think for what your average person, the concept of a dining reservation is way more common than the idea of a ride reservation.
Right. Yeah.
I see the optimistic point of view on that, but ultimately I'll go ahead and make this argument now. The optimistic viewpoint would lead me to believe that then what Disney needed to do was just bring back the original Fast Pass system.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because if it was truly about that, the price is too low to keep out what, you know, the tier of people that benefited mostly from FastPass Plus, which is don't come that often, right? The only people that it severely could negatively affect are annual pass holders,
mm-hmm.
because they, you know, aren't going to pay to do it all the time. The once in the lifetime people are still going to pay to do it. And the not so often people, a la you, are still going to pay to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not including myself in that, though. I don't know. The math of this video makes me go, well, crud, I guess I have to do Genie Plus when I go now and then do the Lightning Lane on top of that for the things that I want to ride.
Which you don't. So you don't have to have Genie Plus to do the Lightning Lane additional
I know, but
purchase.
I'm saying that if I really want to get the max benefit out of my day, I have to do all the things. Like, essentially, that's what this... But yeah, the optimist says, you know, all of these things are creating a level. The way you create a level playing field is you just go back to FastPass, where it is day of, because then you take out the knowledge aspect of it that was an insurmountable insurmountable mountain to climb for the people, you know, in the FastPass Plus system, because the argument was that you could never get the knowledge, because if you don't know about it till you get there, you're too late. And that's 100% true.
Yep.
But the argument was that with FastPass, the knowledge wasn't as big of a deal because, yeah, you didn't have the knowledge on day one, but by day two, you could know what was up and you could be just as knowledgeable as everybody else out there. And that could still exist, but Genie Plus is, yeah, all of that plus $15 a day.
Mm-hmm.
So then that is, you know, the tiers are no longer separated by knowledge. The tiers are separated by dollars.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, I reject the optimistic view of this video and say 100% this is, I am firmly in, and I know.
I think the video rejects the optimistic view too, but it's just presented as a what if.
As a possible point. you know, I want to be optimistic when we talk, because I've listened to enough pessimistic podcasts, and that's why, you know, I think we've talked about in the past, that's why there's things we skip. But yeah, no, you guys know me, I'm a pessimist in a lot of things. And this is one where I was a pessimist. And when I saw the numbers, I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. So you guys just kind of gave fuel to the fire of my pessimistic viewpoint.
So Shapeland, there is in the video, there is a theme park simulation that is presented, and it's this just fake theme park called Shapeland, and they've got, you know, six.
Wait. Hey, we're now firmly in spoiler country,
well,
right?
Yeah. Hang on. Yes. Let me.
Do you still want to do the turn? Okay, I'll let you do the turn. I'm just saying, you don't. We're in spoiler country.
Yes,
now.
I know. But go ahead. I know. But so Shapeland is, you know, presented as a fake theme park that is, you know, a bunch of different attractions that are all shape based, and the guy that made this documentary paid a programmer to build this simulation. Like, so this is a simulation with theme park guests that all have individual wants and needs, and one term you need to know is balking, which is when a wait is so high that the person is not willing to wait. Is it the balk rate? I don't remember, but whenever a wait is too high, a person won't ride the attraction, and that's called balking. And so all of these different people have different times that they'll balk at. And so someone, like the guy went through and built this whole big simulation of Shapeland, and he, in the video, he goes through all the results and everything. And then, at the very end of the Shapeland portion, he goes, oh, and also Shapeland is Animal Kingdom. And like that's the reveal, is that Shapeland is Animal Kingdom. And this simulation is actually based on an actual day at Animal Kingdom. And they've got touring plans data that they've built into the simulation. And so this is like an actual day at Animal Kingdom that's being simulated. And so you can actually go in and see this real data about, and they ran it with no fast pass, paper fast pass. And, what was the third?
Fast Pass Plus.
So, yeah. So that's the reveal, is that like all of this, you know, fake, oh, I made this fake theme park, all this data is actually Animal Kingdom. And then he goes on to say, like, I ran this against Magic Kingdom also and got the same results. So yeah, it's a fun reveal. I enjoyed the surprise of that, you know, of knowing that this was actually real data. And so it even drives it home a little more that paper fast pass, kind of the self-selecting nature of paper fast pass, was the best experience for the most people.
Paper fast pass still led to longer waits for some people, but was a more egalitarian. Is that correct?
I don't know. Egalitarian. Let me look up what that word means. I don't even know what that word means. Egalitarian. Egalitarian.
Relating
affirming?
To or believing in the principle that all people are equal and deserve equal rights and opportunities.
Mm.
So, was a more egalitarian option for because it kind of, again, as we've said before, even the playing ground for people.
Yes. Yeah. It treats everyone the same, because at that point, like, I remember you talking about going to California Adventure and you having one, the wait line for Fast Pass was like all the way out to the gate almost. But having to run to like giving one person everybody's card and then that one person runs to the back of the park, gets all the Fast Passes, and then runs back. And then you can, you know, go about your day and stuff. I remember you telling stories of that. I actually only went to Disney like twice where paper FastPass was a thing. So I really didn't have that that kind of experience with it, because I think I was at Walt Disney World one time with paper FastPass, and then Disneyland with paper FastPass. So I never, you know, got good at paper FastPass. I got pretty good with FastPass Plus, because every other time I've gone, it's been FastPass Plus. So I kind of, you know, I got good at doing the refresh and see when the last minute fast passes pop up and stuff. But
and being there at 60 days on the mark, and yes, knowing that it was for the entirety of your stay, so you could go further out.
Yeah, you could do 67 days if you were doing a week. So yeah, I got pretty good at that, but I never had the, like, I don't even know if I would call it negative, but I never had the, like, weird kind of mad dash to the FastPass kiosk that you talked about. But that makes it equal for everybody. Everybody gets into the park at the same time. Everybody can, you know, power walk, because no running, but everybody can walk vigorously to the back of the park and get whatever they want. So
I told you about my coworker who was on workman's comp after getting bowled over by a guest, right?
No.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I'm sorry, this is going to be a weird tangent, but when you said power walking because no running, it just made me think of it. So, we would, sometimes in Interventions, we would get set to work the breezeway leading to Mission Space and Test Track, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of my coworkers was working that. And I mean, she was maybe 5 foot, 5'2" at the absolute most. And quite honestly, I think she was probably under 5 foot. But like, so this really short girl, and apparently this guest just like was trucking it to go get a Mission Space Fast Pass or something, or to get in line, you know, at Mission Space or whatever it was, and just like popped right into her and just sent her end over end. And like I said, she was on workman's comp for, I don't know, like 6 or 8 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Because of the damage that this guest had done. Just, and like, apparently he ran into her and just kept right on going, because he had to, because, you know, oh well, that's a cast member down, but I've still got to go be first in line for whatever attraction he was headed to or whatever. So
collateral, yeah, damage, man.
It's unavoidable. You really hate it. Yeah,
it's unavoidable, exactly. Unfortunately.
Yeah, I think they took it to replay and they didn't call in for targeting. So, I mean, I guess it was all good. But
he led
anyway,
with the shoulder.
Yeah. No direct contact, which, again, as short as she was, how he didn't make contact above the shoulders is beyond me. But, I guess it was a textbook hit. Sorry. So that was a weird side. But, yeah, there were definitely things that you could know that could make you better at the paper FastPass system, but it didn't take nearly the depth of knowledge that it takes to be successful at FastPass Plus,
right,
or that it, I guess, sorry, that it took to be successful at FastPass Plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, I enjoyed the Shapeland stuff because it did give hard data. And again, it gave hard data for why I'm like, you guys still aren't accounting for this, this, and this. Because I was in the long tail of Shapeland, right? Or for the FastPass Plus system. I was mm-hmm. in that tail end of the people who were getting to do a lot of attractions at the cost of other people not getting to do nearly as many attractions.
Yeah.
Because I had the knowledge. And yeah, I was 100% that person that was going, you had the opportunity to learn about this. You chose not to do it. But I also fully recognize it sucks when you did have the opportunity, but you had an opportunity when you didn't know that you had an opportunity. And by the time that you did know, it was way too late. And this is your first and maybe only trip.
Yeah.
To Walt Disney World. And now it's going to be miserable.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have the information in time. And you thought, oh, Disney is this really cool place that we want to go. Not, Disney is this really cool place. Now I need to spend days doing research about all the ins and outs to really have a good time.
Yeah.
And not get cut by everybody.
I think the main thing that I took away from this documentary is that FastPass Plus was not a good solution. And before I watched it, I thought it was. I thought FastPass Plus was pretty good, but it's because I was the guy who was friends with the monster.
Yeah, I understood. You were like me. We were on the long tail of it, and so it was a great system for us.
Yeah. And I had not even considered the fact that someone, you know, who only goes once in a lifetime might have to, you know, spend an extra day at Epcot or Magic Kingdom or whatever because they didn't get, you know, they didn't get to ride everything they wanted because they, you know, they got caught up in standby wait lines and that were made worse by people like me who was gaming the system or who were gaming the system to, you know, get fast passes at the last minute or whatever. So, you know, I think what I learned is that FastPass Plus wasn't a great solution and that something like Genie, not, you know, having to pay for it, but something like let me say this, something like MaxPass or FastPass, the paper FastPass, something that's day of, you know, is better. And I think, again, I'm trying to look at this optimistically, but I feel like with just a few tweaks, Genie really could be good. Because, you know, MaxPass in Disneyland costs money. It's $10 a day. So Genie is not that much more for Genie Plus. It's $15
a day. It's 50% more.
I know. Yes, it is. It is 50% more, but it's also $5. We're not talking about like it's you're either paying $100 or $150. Like it's five extra dollars. So you know, and if you look at the cost difference between annual passes at Walt Disney World and Disneyland, I mean, Disneyland's annual passes have always been far more expensive for less stuff. So, it's like, yeah, they're different. And yes, it is 50% more, but the prices on each coast have always been very different. And there's some things that cost more at Disneyland, and there's some stuff that costs more at Walt Disney World. So, I don't know. I'm willing to like, let that come out in the wash. You know, it's some stuff's more expensive at each park. but I think just with a few tweaks, I think Genie really could be the egalitarian solution that FastPass was. Because, you know, if you, which I've been saying, you know, since, if you just take for granted that you have to pay the $15, like because it's so cheap, everyone's going to do it. You have to pay the $15. If you just take that for granted and just understand or whatever, understand that everybody's going to pay the $15, then you can just take for granted that everybody has Genie Plus. And I think they can tweak it. I think they can make it a more fair system that really does incorporate the good parts of Paper FastPass the way that MaxPass does, and offer an ease of use for people who are once in a lifetimers.
By the way, I think by near the end, MaxPass was like $15 or $20.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it's not actually a difference in price there.
The end of MaxPass was 4 days ago as we record this. I mean, Disney announced on, I think, December 7th that Genie was coming to Disneyland tomorrow, like on the 8th. Because I know my Disney TikTok was like just blowing up with people, Disneyland people going, what?
Actually, I'm seeing now that it was $20 per person per day. So look, wow. Discount, guys.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's 50% less.
But no, that's not 50% less. That's 25% less. Math, Jeremy.
I was never good at it. I got a degree in art, Brad.
but MaxPass, I will continue to stand by my opinion. And again, I do recognize,
I mean, MaxPass was totally paper FastPass with your phone.
Totally different things. MaxPass included PhotoPass.
Yeah, well, okay. Yes.
If Genie Plus included PhotoPass at Walt Disney World, do not at me about the benefits at Disneyland. Don't care. If it included that, then I would be like, yeah, sure, whatever. Sign me up.
We understand, though, why it doesn't.
Yes, 100%. PhotoPass
is so much more of a money getter at Disney World than it is.
Well, and PhotoPass has so much... There is so much more to PhotoPass at Walt Disney World versus just for the sake of there's more space at Walt Disney. So there's more PhotoPass to have.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. I just like.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that there are enough people high up in Walt Disney, you know, parks and resorts that want to make a good user experience, that want to make a good guest experience, and that someone is actually trying to do the right thing, the thing that FastPass Plus was originally designed to do, the gamble that they made, that we're going to spend $1 billion on this for no known gain. The gain is all theoretical, and it's all basically word of mouth, that people are going to have such a better experience that they're going to tell other people that Walt Disney World rules and that FastPass Plus is good. And that's what's going to make FastPass a success. And my hope is that someone is willing to say, like, yes, okay, now there is a known profit. There's known revenue in it. So maybe since there's known revenue in it, they will be, instead of working to benefit the people who are there the most because they're, you know, or even to benefit the once in a while people like me and you who go every year or two, because they're going to spend the most money. Maybe since there's built-in revenue to Genie Plus, they'll work to make it a better experience for everybody, since they're going to make the same amount of money, basically, from annual pass holders and once-in-a-lifetimers and once-in-a-whilers. You know, everybody's going to be the same revenue stream. So they don't have to worry about how they don't have to worry about, like, benefiting someone over someone else. And so this will let them truly make an egalitarian system that is beneficial, that is most beneficial to the most people, which would make Walt Disney World the most happy. And if that's the case, if that ends up being the case, then I am way happier to pay, because if I have to pay a little bit to make it better for everybody and to like truly have a paper fast pass type of experience, then you know what, I guess I'm good with that. But I hope that, you know, in the coming years this system gets built out in that way. Because to me, and I'm not a profit doctor or whatever. I'm not a profit manager man. I'm not a businessman. I don't know. I don't understand. You know, I don't know what they're going for. But to me, it doesn't. It seems like they're making the money.
You don't know much about history.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't know much philosophy.
Yeah. And science books.
But I feel like
they're making money no matter what.
But dude, the video that you watched, right? The video that you and I have watched three times now says if everybody buys Genie Plus, the monster comes right back out of the cage. Like it fixes nothing because of the number of people who are now in the parks. Like everything starts to break again if the pricing does not slow people down. And spoiler alert, I was going to save this for another time, but we can just go ahead and talk about it because we're already talking everything Genie Plus and Fast Pass and everything. Undercover Tourist now has discounted tickets with Genie Plus added.
Really?
And the discount on the ticket with Genie Plus is slightly higher than the discounted, you know, the savings without Genie Plus.
So the discount is more than $15?
So the additional cost on like a 3-day or longer ticket is less than $15 per day. So like on a 3-day ticket, the cost when you add the Genie Plus, if you take the difference between their 3-day ticket, right, which is already discounted over the gate price, and then you subtract the base one from the one with Genie Plus, and then divide that by 3 days, it's they're charging about $14.36 a day for Genie Plus. So hey, there's already some discounts there. So if you're a Jeremy who wants to do Genie Plus, there's now even more reason to go buy your tickets from, I don't know why they don't sponsor us yet, UndercoverTourist.com.
Undercover Tourist and whatever that timeshare company that you stayed at in Orlando, they need to sponsor us.
Undercover Tourist really needs to, because like I'm going to a totally different place next time because that timeshare company, like I just didn't have there wasn't a good discount to be had with them. But Undercover Tourist, like, that is the end-all be-all for tickets, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I haven't found any. So, yeah, you know what? Do at me if you have a dependable place with which those tickets, because I do want to know about it. But it has to be, you know, on the up and up like Undercover Tourist is.
I'm too scared to do those.
To do Undercover Tourist?
Just the discount.
They're partnered with Disney, dude.
Yeah, no. I'm not as scared of Undercover Tourist, but like
you're talking about some of the other. Yeah,
yeah,
100%. Yeah, I think essentially the
humiliation of walking up to the key the turnstile, and them going, no, that's not a real thing, bud. Big Jim's discount ticket website done steered you wrong, man.
But it was Big Jim. How was I supposed to know? Yeah, it's basically $14.36 a day because I did the 7-day, and I'm sure there's some in between there. But a 3-day, it's essentially $14.36 a day. 7-day, it's $14.36 a day. So if you're gonna do Genie Plus while you're there, you should be buying your ticket. You should be buying discount tickets. I know that I will. Whether or not those will have Genie Plus on them, I don't know, but. That's what I would do. Oh man, this video showed me that I need to get Genie Plus and that Disney created the monster and then just made money putting the monster in a cage for a little bit until the monster comes back out. Because okay, here's the one other. This video. Sorry. This episode's going really long. But the one other thing that we need to talk about. Is FastPass in and of itself didn't create the monster. The number of people coming to the parks created the monster, Jeremy. Because the number of people has gone way up.
Oh my gosh, that line graph showing attendance was bananas.
But the only ways to fix that are to start capping the number of people that can go. Thereby telling people that they can't go, right?
Uh-huh.
That's not going to go over. You can't do that. Or you have to just start charging more and more money until the market forces slow down the rate of growth.
And $200 a day.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, to some extent...
It's the shoe analogy.
You would think that would have already started happening, but yet here we find ourselves... And it's not slowing down any.
Yeah.
So I don't know, dude. It's kind of scary, but yeah, that's the monster that they have. There is no way to kill that monster yet.
Yeah.
No good way to kill that. You know how you kill that monster, Jeremy? Walt Disney World over Texas.
Just add another hole.
Walt Disney World Park, right in the middle of the country.
I actually had a friend of mine ask me why they don't have a Middle America park the other day, like a week ago.
Has Defunctland done a video on that? Because if they have, that's where you need to send your friend.
Yeah. I honestly don't know why. I don't know why they don't do a third park, except that Florida is so profitable that they don't need it.
We are not going to get in it right now because I don't, off the top of my head, remember. But there is a whole story to that.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. They were going to do one in Missouri. It was going to be turn of the century America.
But that's what I'm saying. So, yeah, it's not like it hasn't. And
but at the, but at the end of the day, it's just happen. Florida is so profitable and people are going. If they weren't getting people from Middle America, from the, you know, from the Midwest and stuff to come to Florida, sure. But if everybody's coming to Florida, why spend the money to build a park? You know, Florida is just so profitable that I don't think it's worth it to them. That's my thought.
But how many more people could you have? Like, would Florida's numbers significantly go down if you added another park? I don't know that they would.
I think they would.
To what? Numbers from 5 years ago that were still crazy
yeah,
good?
Maybe, yeah.
Oh, no. We're only making money hand over fist over fist. And, yeah. Like, but ultimately, the question isn't will numbers go down at Florida, but how many, like, will it be a one-to-one, the numbers that you lose from California and from Florida that you then have in Poughkeepsie, or do you end up with higher numbers overall between all three? And if you do, then that's a net gain.
I don't know. Yeah. I guess so. If you have an America P&L, then what does that all equal up to? I don't know. That's an interesting thought.
And then the monster can get even worse. Yay!
Oh, I think that'll do it for this episode. You can follow us on Twitter at MTM Podcast. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/MTM Podcast. You can visit us on the web at missingthemouse.co. We'll be back. Maybe not next week. It is the holiday season, and so we may, you know, have some scheduling conflicts and stuff. But we've got some classic episodes. If you didn't listen to last week's classic episode about River Country, I just listened to it yesterday. Man, what a blast from the past. That's 2014, everybody. That's 5 years ago we recorded that one. It's really good. I really, really enjoyed it because it's been a long time and I totally forgot we had that conversation. So if you skip that one because it's, you know, from way back when, go listen to it. It's really good. Brad and I were just little podcast babies back then. We'd only been doing this for like 6 months. But I really think it's a classic good episode. So, yeah, new releases might be a little sporadic until the new year, but it'll be all right.
Help us figure out how to make the holidays work and how to keep kids from getting sick, and then you'll get more regular episodes. Until then, we're going to do the best we can.
Have a magical day.